think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
We got answers. You got questions, we got answers. Used to be, Radio Shack? Remember Radio Shack? We got answers, at least according to a civil suit that has now been filed in this case. And these are accusations. These are explanations that are being made in court and observations. And they are also pointing to provable facts, provable observations by medical professionals and such in some cases. We're going to go through all of it. If you're wanting to get a better idea on what the hell happened in this case, the sheriff and the judge, you are in the right place. We are about to go through information that is new, that is exposing a good chunk of it. I wouldn't say all of it, but a good chunk of it that we were unaware of. And here's the thing about this case that should keep you up at night. It's not the shooting itself, as horrific as it was. It's not even the surveillance video showing the sheriff executing a judge at his own desk in the middle of a Thursday afternoon. In the weeks before, it's the people who watched Mickey Stein's Come Undone piece by piece, allegedly, and somehow convinced themselves that a doctor's appointment would fix it. Maybe that speaks to just how much we don't understand mental health, but it's true. Kimberly Mullins just filed a lawsuit. She's the widow of District Judge Kevin Mullins, the dead one, who was shot and killed in his chambers in Whitesburg, Kentucky on September 19th, 2024. She filed on behalf of herself and her two minor daughters, and she's not just suing the man who allegedly pulled the trigger. She's suing three of his employees, Jason Eccles, LaShawna Frazier, and Christine Balling. All of them worked for the Lecter County Sheriff's Office. All of them, according to this lawsuit, watched their boss spiral into what multiple witnesses would later describe as a psychotic break. And all of them allegedly failed to do the one thing that might have saved Kevin Mullins' life. Warn him. Okay, this is some big stuff. What is she claiming? The lawsuit uses language like anxious, paranoid, and psychotic conduct that posed a foreseeable risk of violence. That's legal phrasing. It's sanitized. It doesn't capture what the court documents actually describe, although it's pretty descriptive. So let me walk you through what the people around Mickey Steins reportedly saw in the days before he allegedly walked into that judge's office and opened fire. 3 days before the shooting, Stein sat for a deposition. We've all heard about this. He was being questioned in a federal civil rights lawsuit involving one of his deputies, a guy named Ben Fields, who had pled guilty for essaying a woman on home incarceration, is where he is now. The abuse allegedly happened in Judge Mullins' chambers after hours. Fields was Mullins' bailiff. He also worked a side job monitoring ankle bracelets for people on house arrest. According to the lawsuit, he told women who couldn't afford the $85 weekly monitoring fee that they could work something out. And I put that in air quotes. At least one woman described being taken to the judge's office and assaulted there. That was allegedly working something out. Fields got 6 months in jail, probation, and a spot on the sex offender registry. Both Steins and Mullins denied knowing anything about it. This is where it gets really interesting. And I want to get your thoughts in the comments section here, too. If you're not on our YouTube channel yet, please do check it out, Hitting Killers with Tony Bruschi, and weigh in on what you think about what we're about to talk about here in this case, okay? And while you're at it, please do hit subscribe, okay? So Steins is sitting for this deposition being asked questions about what he knew and when he knew it. And according to the plaintiff's attorneys, he was a mess. Agitated, unfocused. He took 10 breaks during the questioning, allegedly. At one point, when asked whether he'd authorized his deputy to use public equipment to manage ankle monitors, Stein said, "I don't recall. I'm having an episode, sorry." Then he asked for another break, allegedly. The next day, Steins, who was usually quick to return press calls, took hours to get back to a reporter from the Mountain Eagle about a fatal traffic accident. When he finally did, he told the paper he'd allegedly instructed everyone at the sheriff's office not to say anything to anyone until he returned. He also mentioned, almost in passing, that he'd lost 40 pounds in the past 2 weeks and didn't know why. 40 pounds in 2 weeks, and he didn't know why, if that's even accurate. By September 18th, the day before the shooting, people weren't just concerned. They were allegedly quite alarmed. An attorney named Daniel Dotson, who was friends with both Steins and Mullins, told Kentucky State Police that he'd urged Steins to get a mental health evaluation. Steins reportedly said he'd see his family doctor. Dotson was so worried that he contacted the Kentucky Bar Association to ask what action he could take. He also went directly to Kevin Mullins and warned him, told him Mickey was losing it, told him he couldn't take this kind of pressure. The local police chief, according to Dotson's testimony, put it more bluntly, "That son of a bitch has lost his mind." That's allegedly the quote there, yeah. And here's where it gets worse. Christine Balling, one of the three employees named in the widow's lawsuit, was a staffer at the sheriff's office. She told investigators allegedly that she'd observed very strange behavior from Steins on September 18th, the day before the shooting. Steins allegedly told her that Daniel Dotson had instructed him to give him money and kill himself, or else they were going to kill his wife and daughter. He didn't say who they were. He just knew they were coming. allegedly. Sands reportedly insisted on going home to check on his family. He made bawling help put a bulletproof vest on his wife. He had someone call to check on his daughter. All of this, according to court documents, was captured on Ring camera footage from Stein's home. That same day, or possibly the day of the shooting itself, witnesses reported that Stein's was making phone calls to check on family members who had been dead for years. Let me say that again. The sheriff of Lector County, Kentucky, allegedly was calling dead relatives to make sure they were safe. We're dealing with, if all this is accurate and true, someone who's not doing well. Now, back it up a bit and go, why are you not doing well? Why are you having this mental break? What has pushed your stress level to such a place that you basically just collapsed off the cliff? Could that have to do with the deposition? Could that have to do with what was going on in the department allegedly? Could that have to do with things you may have known about and didn't talk about? Stress can do crazy things to people. And covering up for crazy actions can do even crazier things to people. Is that what was going on? We don't know. But this is seemingly more of the recipe. One sheriff's office staffer told Kentucky State Police, I think his anxiety was completely off the charts. I do feel like he was in a psychosis. So what did they do? According to court records, at least two of the employees named in the civil lawsuit convinced Stein's to see his doctor. That was the intervention. That was the plan. A man who's wearing a gun, who has unfettered access to the courthouse, who believes shadowy forces are coming to murder his family, who's calling dead people on the phone, and the response was to suggest he make an appointment with his family physician. The next day, Kevin Mullins was dead. I gotta say, as lovely as it would be to intervene in more forceful ways, the law doesn't allow for that. And we've seen that in so many other cases. Just because you see someone is losing it, there's only so much you can do. There is, because the law is on the side of the person who's losing it. And if they don't recognize they're losing it and they don't choose to go get the help that they need, there's not a whole lot the outside forces can do unless they've already committed a crime. I know, it's insane. We talk about it every day. The surveillance video from inside the judge's chambers tells the story in silence. There's no audio. A group of people are chatting with the judge casually for about 12 minutes. Stein's walks in, asks everyone to leave for the next 7 minutes. He and Mullins talk. It looks calm, normal even. Then Stein stands up and appears to lock the door. Mullins hands over his cell phone. Stein scrolls through it, then pulls out his own phone, looks something up, and dials a number on the judge's device. That number belonged to his teenage daughter. She didn't answer. Stein's tossed the phone back onto his desk, and then, according to prosecutors, he drew his weapon and started shooting. The video shows Mullen trying to duck behind his desk. It did not save him. Stein's walked out of the chambers, out of the courthouse, and stood on Main Street while technical units rushed inside looking for an active shooter. When officers approached him, he reportedly said, "They're trying to kidnap my wife and kid." 4 days later, a social worker at the Leslie County Jail, where Stein's was being held because of his connections to Lector County jail staff, conducted a triage evaluation. What she allegedly found was a man who appeared to have no idea who he was or why he was there. Her report described Stein's as being in an active state of psychosis. He was disordered or disoriented. He was only aware of things jail staff tell him. He had no recollection of the recent past. He didn't appear to understand the charges against him. He was responding to internal stimuli, which is clinical language for he was reacting to things that weren't there. He became so combative at times that staff had to use pepper spray on him, allegedly. They put him into two different antipsychotic medications. This is not a man who snapped in a moment of rage. This is a man who, according to the evidence compiled by his own defense team and corroborated by multiple witnesses, was deteriorating visibly for days, maybe longer. And the people around him saw it. They documented it. Some of them even tried, in their way, to address it. But nobody pulled him off the job. Nobody took his gun. Nobody told Kevin Mullins that the man responsible for courthouse security might be a threat to everyone in the building, including the judge himself. The defense has been trying to get the murder indictment thrown out. They argued that prosecutors withheld evidence of Stein's mental state from the grand jury. Specifically, they claimed that Kentucky State Police Detective Clayton Stampner testified falsely when he told the grand jury he wasn't aware of Stein's displaying signs of mental health issues. The defense says KSP interviewed multiple people who expressed exactly those concerns. In a sealed transcript, Stamper apparently acknowledged that people had said Stein's wasn't acting himself, but when a grand jury asked jurors whether Stein's was in his sane mind at the time of the shooting, Stamper said he believed he was. Is he someone who's even qualified to answer that question, though? Why are we asking people questions like that who aren't qualified to answer them? Police Detective Clayton Stampner is not a medical expert. Let's quit relying on people for answers they can't answer. Clinical answers they're not qualified to answer. Yeah, most of us could look at the, he must be in his, I mean, he's doing his job, you know, but. And if you're going to ignore all the other people saying, hey, there's something really wrong here, because in your opinion, he's doing fine. What qualifies that opinion exactly? This week, Special Judge Christopher Crowan denied the motion to dismiss. He ruled that prosecutors met their burden of showing probable cause and that the video evidence alone was sufficient to support the indictment. He also denied the defense's request to unseal Stein's psychiatric evaluation, but he did grant a bond hearing. No date has been set. So the murder case moves forward, and now the civil case is running alongside it. That's how we're learning all of these things, through the civil case. Kimberly Mullins' lawsuit makes a straightforward argument. Kentucky law requires the sheriff's office to provide courthouse security and protect judges. The three employees she's suing had direct knowledge that their boss was unraveling. They had a duty to warn Judge Mullins, according to the suit. They had a duty to control Stein's, or at least to prevent him from having unsupervised access to the man he would allegedly kill, and they failed on both counts. I think that might be a stretch. I do. Because then you are, again, you are asking three non-clinicians to make clinical choices. That ain't part of their job. That is not part of them being human beings either, because they're not trained to do that. They're not trained to recognize that. They're not trained to see those steps down the road of what could possibly happen. Also, they don't even have the rights to do what you're asking them to do. So good luck. The defense for those employees has already responded. Their attorneys argue that Kentucky law clearly holds that defendants had no duty to warn or protect Judge Mullins. They claim the lawsuit doesn't allege that any of them were aware of a specific intent or plan to kill the judge. Stein's own attorneys are claiming sovereign immunity because he was sued in his official capacity. Now, look, I feel horrible that everybody lost somebody and they're looking for the boogeyman here, but I'm sorry, the assistants, I don't think they're the answer. I think you got to look a little deeper. What the hell's going on in this court? This seems like more noise, to be completely honest. And I get it. If you're in that position, if you're the spouse of this judge, you're looking out for your best interest. I get it. What else was going on with the judge? Seems there's a lot of rumblings over in those areas. And blaming the understafflings for going, why didn't you step in and stop all of your higher-ups from doing bad things? Well, Looks like they had a pretty tight control on keeping shady shit at bay, now didn't they? Allegedly. It's not exactly an atmosphere where someone raises a hand and says, hey, maybe we should, and here's the deal. It certainly sounds like they did everything they could within the confines of the law. Until you give people the ability to go, you're crazy, let's take you away right now, hand me your gun, which doesn't exist. What do you expect these people to do? Like Christmas vacation, hog tie him up, put a bow and carry him down to the mental health facility? That, again, it's not how this works. Should there be more ways to intervene? Yes. Are there? No. So you got to kind of deal with the hand that's been dealt to you. A hearing is scheduled for January 7th, and here's what the civil suit forces us to confront. It's not enough to ask whether Mickey Steins was legally sane when he pulled the trigger. That's a question for the criminal trial. The civil suit asks something different. Did the people around him do enough? And if the answer is no, what does accountability actually look like? Because let's be honest about what enough looked like in this case. A doctor's appointment. That was a plan for a man who believes assassins are coming for his family, who's making calls to dead relatives, who can't get through a legal deposition without having an episode. And the intervention is to tell him to see his general practitioner, not to remove him from duty, not to confiscate his weapon, not to alert the judge who works 30 feet away that the sheriff might be a danger to himself and others. Just see your doctor. Mickey, take a break, get some rest. I think you could also argue if he's at home and he's calling dead relatives, if that in fact happened and that's what's going on, where the fuck was the intervention at home? If we're going to go after the employees that are seeing this, how about we go after the family too that was seeing this happen at home and didn't take him in? Because you know who has a hell of a lot more rights to institutionalize someone on a psychiatric hold for 7 days? The family. You want to have a better chance at getting someone put away? The family, not the staff at the courthouse. Maybe we need to take a little look inside that home and go, if he's doing that in your home, and again, if, I don't know, if the answer is no and he's not and you had no idea that he's losing it, I don't know, when he's getting mom fitted for the bulletproof vest, that might be a sign. You can't go and cast stones on the staff if you yourself were seeing just as big of red flags and you didn't stop him. If you couldn't stop him, how the fuck were they supposed to? Again, it's one of these cases where all these people see something, they say something, but doing something, that's where their hands are literally tied. Not that they don't want to, but there's only so much you can do. And getting mad at the people who can only do so much is not your solution. There's a detail in the court documents that I keep coming back to. Daniel Dotson, the attorney who warned both Steins and Mullins, told investigators about a conversation he had with his wife the night before the shooting. He said he told her, referring to Steins, "That son of a bitch has lost his mind." He knew. He knew something was deeply wrong, and he tried to do something about it. He told the Bar Association. He told the judge. But Kevin Mullins still showed up for work the next day, still let Mickey Steins into his chambers, still had a calm 7-minute conversation with him before the door was locked and the gun came out. What did Mullins think when Dotson warned him? Did he dismiss it? Did he think he could handle Mickey, that their years of friendship would protect him? Did he even take it seriously? We'll never know. Mullins can't tell us. He's dead. But I'm going to guess, judging by the actions, that's probably somewhere along the lines of what was processed. A lot of people do not see just how dangerous and serious the situation is until it gets way over the edge. That's our nature. And then there's the daughter, Stein's teenage daughter. Investigators looked into rumors of inappropriate relationships between her and Judge Mullins. Both she and Stein's wife denied any contact. Police found no evidence of communication between the girl and the judge. No text, no calls, no social media. That's according to the police in this town. that seem to have a problem with corruption. At least you got one of them that's already been charged on issues here. So take that for what it's worth. The people, the group, the collective, I'm not saying they're all bad, but you know, you're getting, consider the source. According to them, there's nothing. Okay. Maybe there's nothing. A call to a number he had to look up on his own device because it wasn't saved in the judge's contacts. The only connection they could find was a call Steins made from Mullen's phone right before the shooting. Again, that call to a number he had to look up on his own device because it wasn't saved in the judge's contacts. So whatever Steins believed was happening, he believed it enough to kill over. Whether that belief had any basis in reality or whether it was the product of a mind that had completely disconnected from it is something the courts are going to have to sort out. But here's what we know for certain. A sheriff shot a judge. Multiple people saw warning signs. Some of them even took action, or just not the right action and not enough of it. And now a widow, and two children are left to sue for answers that the criminal justice system may never fully prove. The case is still working its way through the federal court. Ben Fields, that's the deputy who pled guilty to the essay, his case. The one whose alleged crimes in Judge Mullen's chambers set off the chain of events that led to the deposition, to the spiral, to the shooting. A trial is scheduled for 2026. Sabrina Atkins, a woman who accused Fields and testified against him, is still seeking justice. One of her co-plaintiffs died of a drug overdose after the lawsuit was filed. Meanwhile, multiple women have come forward claiming Judge Mullins himself was involved in a sex-for-favor scheme. One said she attended parties with him. Another said she'd had sex with him in his chambers. A former deputy jailer described the jail as a brothel. Mullins was never charged. He denied everything. And now he's not here to defend himself. So what are we left with? A courthouse that was allegedly rotten from the inside, a deputy who essayed women in a judge's office, a sheriff who may have known about it or should have known, who was being sued over his failure to stop it, a judge who either enabled the abuse, participated in it, or was simply in the wrong place at the wrong time when a disturbed man with a gun decided he was the enemy, and a community of 21,000 people trying to make sense of how the institutions they trusted to keep order became the source of the chaos. The civil lawsuit filed by Kimberly Mullins won't answer all those questions. It narrowly focuses on whether three sheriff's office employees failed in their duty to protect her husband, which was never their job, but it pulls at the thread that runs through his entire case. The gap between seeing a problem and doing something about it, the distance between that son of a bitch has lost his mind and maybe he should see a doctor. Kevin Mullins is dead because that gap was too wide. And now a jury may have to decide who's responsible for not closing it. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. I'd love to hear them. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi is where you will find our page. If you're not already there, please do check it out. While you're there, please do press subscribe. And if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please go to the review section of our channel, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and leave us a review there. We'd greatly appreciate that. Love to hear your feedback. And love to see some positive words. So thank you so much for that in advance. Helps other folks find us as well. So we do appreciate that. Put a lot of work into this. So you taking those 5 seconds to do that, really, it means a lot. So thank you for that. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
All right. Today we are stepping into one of the most extraordinary and troubling cases I think that we've ever covered, and we still don't know most of the details. That's what makes it so damn elusive. It's the case that isn't just about one act of violence, but about what can fester inside a justice system when power goes unchecked. In September 2024, inside the Lector County Courthouse in Whitesburg, Kentucky, Sheriff Sean Mickey Steins walked into the chambers of District Judge Kevin Mullins. It opened fire. We all saw it on video. Judge Mullins died there in his own office. The entire shooting captured on courthouse surveillance. Steins surrendered immediately. He's now indicted for the murder of a public official and awaiting trial. But that single moment didn't happen in a vacuum. 3 days earlier, Steins had been deposed in a federal civil rights lawsuit, Adkins versus Fields. That alleges a pattern of sexual exploitation and coercion tied to the very courthouse where the shooting occurred. In that suit, a former home incarceration officer has already pled guilty for SA, sodomy, and tampering. Plaintiffs allege some of the misconduct took place inside Judge Mullins' chambers. Steins was named in that lawsuit for alleged failures of supervision, though not accused of any sort of SA wrongdoing himself. After the shooting, body cam footage shows Steins distraught and paranoid, pleading not to be harmed. His lawyers have filed notice of an insanity or extreme emotional disturbance defense. Prosecutors are opposing bond and have not ruled out seeking the death penalty. At the time, women are now stepping forward publicly, some on the record, with journalists like Brian Anton describing how power, fear, and retaliation kept them silent for years. They've alleged ask for favors arrangements, threats of losing their children, and a courthouse culture that blurred the line between justice and exploitation. These are allegations, not criminal convictions against Judge Mullins, but they frame the environment Steins inhabited before he pulled the trigger. This isn't just a Kentucky story. It's a cautionary tale about what can happen when a small town justice system becomes a closed ecosystem and accountability collapses. How does an officer sworn to uphold the law reach the point of killing a judge? How do victims weigh speaking out when every official holds power over their freedom? And how can a community rebuild trust when the courthouse itself has become the crime scene? To help us untangle the behavior in this and the power dynamics at play, Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent, former chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program. Robin, I just saw the interview recently Brian Enton did with another one of the individuals who's making claims of the ask for favors situation there in the courthouse. And then you got the sheriff, who just days earlier was in that deposition, certainly had a good understanding of what the charges were at stake and what was going on. What kind of psychological profile do you think the sheriff had as he walked into that courthouse that day that he took the judge's life?
Boy, I've gone full circle on this one a couple times, Tony, because we keep getting more data coming in. And I'm boiling it down to this right now. With the more data coming in, we're starting to see a lot more smoke. Mm-hmm. When I first started seeing this, I was thinking we got a very rare occurrence of a potential psychotic break. Mm-hmm. Because some data points are going in that direction because of patterns of his past behavior and all those things. But as we start, and as Brian Etten's doing a great job of seeing smoke, we might not have quite the psychotic break I was originally thinking. Because psychotic breaks, typically if someone is having an episode, they're very random. The paranoia goes in there, which we're seeing some things with him wearing his vest and all those things that have been reported. But what's pulling me away from the psychotic break, and we might have a pattern of really bad, abhorrent behavior that led to this, is the fact that all of his actions of apparently being paranoid were centered around the courthouse. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking we're going to find out a lot of dirty things in the days and weeks to come. And I think he had a plan. I think he'd been planning it for a while. Because that's where I'm leaning to right now. I'm less on the side of the psychotic break thing. I think he knew exactly what he was doing and why he was doing it.
almost the courthouse being a triggering factor.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing, considering when you consider the chambers itself are at play in this conversation of the allegations that things were happening in the judge's chamber itself. How much do you think, I mean, we are missing a big piece here because, well, Kevin Mullins is dead, the judge, and the allegations are that some of these things took place in his chambers. He is not listed in that civil suit, but obviously another individual is, and there has been charges there. But the fact that his own office, his own chambers, basically, being listed as a place where some of these things took place, and there has been allegations. Again, Kevin's dead. How much are we missing here because he's dead, before I ask too many other questions?
Yeah, I think he's going to be obviously a centerpiece of the puzzle because that's where the seat of power was and the power of control. You know, I started getting tinges of Alec Murdoch case on this.
Yeah.
Just because of that power control and small town vibe, you know, kind of almost a little like Richard Allen and Delphi, small town.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see, again, as investigators, hopefully what they're doing is, and I don't have any reason not to believe it, is when you see smoke and you have allegations, you have to run all those allegations down. And even though you have a seat of power at the top, which is controlling things, there's going to be people around them, especially since there was charges against someone else, one of the bailiffs, I think it was, you know, in this case. And so I'm hoping we're going to get some data leakage on this one, because his behavior, the sheriff's behavior, changed at a very certain point, and it became very focused, even though that observed paranoia became very focused again around that courthouse, around a lot of a lot of crazy unhealthy behavior, isn't there, that mm-hmm. seemed to pop up and spring up. I think, again, if I'm throwing on my conjecture hat, which is all we have at this point, is that he all of a sudden had an aha moment. And when his aha moment happened, he then put on his investigator hat and took a deeper dive, and he didn't like what he found. And I think, again, pure conjecture at this mm-hmm. point. But that leads me more to the plan rather than a psychotic break.
Yeah.
Robin.
Yes, Stacey.
So I've got a question, and obviously it's a very broad question. Do you think this is going on in other municipalities across the nation? Do you think this is a one-off? Do you think that there are elements of this? Just based on what you've seen in your career, do you think that this is something that's going on in other communities, that there's just this bubbling cauldron of something that's about to blow in another community?
So I don't think it's systemic, as a quick answer, because it's just not. But at the same time, the old rule of if you see one, there's probably 10 others. And so, and typically what we do and what we do here and what media does is it's easier to kind of find and focus on the abhorrent behavior. And one of the reasons we do that is so we can prevent it in other areas too, because in each case that we look at and examine, there's red flags that led up to this. And one of the things we do as both opinion pieces that we do, as well as investigative pieces that we try to, I think, blend the two together here, is bring light to it so we can prevent these things from happening in all the other cases. But that being said, I don't think systemic, because why are these things not systemic? Because a lot of people have to know, and by and large, as a species, we are good people. We want to do moral and ethical things. One of the reasons we have laws is to have accountability for each other, and, you know, we are our brother's keeper. And so in these larger municipalities, it's harder to do these things. But are there smaller areas where there's family control for a period of time? There's And a slow boiling frog, which a little bit of bad behavior here over a period of time escalating becomes more acceptable and more and more acceptable, until you have one person that finally says, I've had enough, or they move in from out of town and mm-hmm. they're not part of that cult. And so, but again, long answer to, I don't think systemic, but I think there's others? Yes, there's, okay. there's most, it's hard not to imagine there isn't others.
It makes you wonder just, you know, how much of it, you know, they all kind of, when it happens, it comes to the surface at different times. It doesn't seem like this is coming to the surface because of any sort of other existential factors in society. I mean, it's more so other than you know, this event exposed it, that there already was an event that exposed it, the initial lawsuit that was filed, and then others realizing, oh gosh, we haven't heard a lot of anything from anybody within the law enforcement area, within the courthouse area, within anything of the legal judicial system, people who work in that building, basically. We've heard a lot from other people on the outside. A lot of women have come forward with these allegations of coercion tied to their legal outcomes. Why do you think it is that we haven't heard a lot of, I don't know, tampering that down if it's not true? You would think that if some of these things were not really going on, you would hear a lot more, that's not how our courthouse works. No, we hear like dead silence. It seems to be a lot of crickets about what actually goes on in this courthouse from anyone who's working the front desk to, you know, the judge.
Yeah, what people don't say is almost as important as what people do say. You can learn a lot by what is said and what is not said, timing of all those things. And yeah, silence can be deafening and can be very revealing as well. And again, you can't jump to a conclusion, but you can also say we need to take a deeper look, because why isn't that happening? What's the goal and objective of not saying something? Is it because they're really well organized in their media releases and their public publicity people, or is because they're deathly afraid? You know, fear is always the greatest motivator of all of us, and it's what keeps people from saying things is fear, and then we rationalize our behaviors. So it could all this be going on? It's possible.
And I want to talk about that, the rationalizing of the behaviors. And I'm not saying like everybody in this courthouse is doing something wrong, but there's a lot of people, I'm going to assume, in the courthouse who have some knowledge of the wrongdoing, or at least the inkling of it. And it's like, well, what am I going to do about it? I work over here at the mailroom, as if that's even a position anymore. Mm-hmm. But other ancillary parts around the building where they weren't involved in these things, but, you know, rumors travel and you go, oh, I think I know that that's going on. But there's nothing they could have done about it if they wanted to stay employed.
Right.
And there's that pressure to be quiet, because if you were to make an accusation and you can't prove it, well, then you're going to get sued. And so there's a lot of reasons to be quiet. But at the same point, is it, I guess I'm wondering how much, when you're living in an environment like that day after day, is it living in fear of exposing it, or is it just, it's so normalized? I'm wondering how people in that courthouse are feeling right now as all this goes on. On the outside, we look at this going, oh my gosh, like this is twisted stuff here. And if we were to assume that others have some knowledge here and are, you know, doing exactly what I just said, are they living in fear? Or I'm wondering if they're looking at this as, oh, come on, this happens everywhere. The rationalizing of the behavior. It's not good, but I wonder how much of that goes on that also further solidifies the thought that there's this level of unhealthy craziness around it, but we can't quite accept the level to which it is because it's so extreme, so we normalize it down to another place.
It's probably a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
So here's one of the laws of human nature is we're always going to act in our own best interest in terms of our safety, security, and prosperity from our own point of view, from whatever context and situation we're living in. And so all these individuals are acting in what they think is their best interest and comes down to fear of reprisal, fear of not being able to move. And what that looks like to that individual could be very different. So say you have one individual that is witting that, hey, something was going on, so they're going to keep their mouth shut because they're fearful that someone's going to find out that they were involved. You can have others that had no idea anything's going on, but now they're hearing these allegations and they're fearful of being connected in some way, so they're going to keep their heads down. There's all kinds of reasons why people are taking the actions they're taking, and it's hard to predict exactly what's causing it, but we're getting data on all this. And so the rationalizing of it, we rationalize things when we want to believe, what we want to believe. And if we have a job, because remember, we're going to act in our own best interest, as I said, for ourselves and our families, those we care about. And if we don't feel we have other options, if we feel like we're trapped and we only get an inkling of this might be going on, isn't it going on? If I had an option, if I don't have direct firsthand knowledge, again, there's not going to be a lot of people that have very, very clear firsthand knowledge if anything was going on with the judge or anyone else. it's going to be a very, very small, tight circle. Now, there's going to be leakage of other people that might think or might not think something was going on. What happens is, if you don't want to believe it, what do we do with our confirmation bias? We're going to look at and only take in data that's going to help us rationalize nothing was going on. Mm-hmm. So we can feel better about who we are, because we don't want to be the type of person that allows abhorrent behavior to go on around us or even be associated with that as in a workplace, because that will destroy our own self-image. It'll destroy our own being. And so that's how we as human beings will rationalize otherwise really, really abhorrent behavior. And then you cascade on top of it groupthink. Mm-hmm. Well, if no one else is saying anything, it must be all right. And I like Billy Bob Joe. He's a great guy. And
Billy Bob Joe's great.
I love Billy Bob Joe.
You know, he's a half step above Schmuckatelli.
He is. I like Billy Bob.
You know, but these people, you know, they will look to others to gauge what their behavior and reaction should be. And if you have someone you respect in your life, you have someone that has time, a lot more time in a position than you do, and you see what they're doing and what their behaviors are, and then you try to understand them and say, well, this is a really good family person. They have a really good standing. They're really good in their church. They're good morals and ethics. And if they're not saying anything here, it must be okay. And so I'll just look the other way, because maybe there's no other way to look. That's how we as human beings do this, because if we did anything other than this, we'd be invalidating ourselves. We don't like doing that. It hurts us psychologically.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tony, you and I have worked in places, and I'm nothing like this went on, but you and I have worked in similar places where there were things going on and people kind of looked the other way, and it was a family organization.
Yeah.
You kind of get into this mode where it's self-preservation. I need this job. I need to continue with what I'm doing. This is my career. But yet, at some point, you do break. I mean, Robin, you're 100% correct. At one point, the volcano just blows, and you got to go. You got to get out. You got to figure out something different, because you can't tolerate it. But it's amazing how humans can just do the status quo, because it's just easier. It's just easier.
And so, Stacey, to your point, this is exactly what you need to do, not you, but people need to do if you're going to be an investigator, but going to be an interviewer, is what we just did here. Is we just did a very deep dive on empathy. Because now that you understand those people, again, if there's anything going on, but it doesn't matter. Regardless, they're going to be interviewing all these people in that courthouse. They're going to be interviewing people that are surrounding these allegations. And if you're going to go in and interview someone, you can't go in and interview thinking in your head, oh, if you let this go on, you're really, really a horrible individual and a horrible human being. And I'm going to sit here and judge the living hell out of you for this. Do you think the likelihood of you making a connection and them sharing with you all that was going on is high or low? It's extremely low. So you have to go in with an understanding of what would compel someone to not say something. Mm-hmm. Well, we just went through it. And then you can empathize with it. It doesn't mean you agree that it was the right or wrong thing to do. Yeah. Just understand the decision process. We walked a mile in their shoes and said, hey, this is a really tough situation you're in. You know, what can we do together maybe to move the ball forward a little bit to right some wrongs that others did? You know, together. So that's how we do these interviews. This is how we get to the truth, is always thinking in terms of what can I do to inspire someone to share the truth with me before they have an opportunity to deceive. And that's how you do it. You dive deep to understand them, and so that you don't do the worst thing in the world is take a look at some shame and say, hey, look at your shame. Now tell me everything. It never works.
It doesn't work. They put up their walls even harder.
Oh, sure.
Know, they reinforce those walls to keep you from getting the information you're looking for.
I want to talk about the confirmation bias that could exist if the trial does take place there in Lecter County. I know they're talking about possibly moving it. And I think you can look at it from both ways in some perspectives, but I want to look at it this way because I don't think a lot of people are seeing it. One could look at it and go, oh, well, if this is happening in their town, then they're going to find him guilty no matter what, just because. I don't know. What I'm wondering about in the confirmation bias here is in this kind of small knit community, you don't necessarily want to believe these sort of things are going on. And a lot of the victims that you have here have criminal records, substance abuse issues, CPS involvement. You know, they're not clean slates. And in no way does that mean that these people are lying or making things up. No, these are oftentimes the victims of these sort of things. But again, that's asking human beings to understand you know, psychology and think more than one thought ahead. That being said, you're going to have a lot of witnesses here that are, as you know, again, I'm not trying to denigrate these people at all, but if you're on the jury and you're seeing them come in, some are going to go, oh, they're kind of icky. They're kind of, you know, I wouldn't do that. I don't have a record. I didn't have this problem. I didn't have that problem. And people will go for that sort of a bias. And I could see in some cases then discrediting them mentally, whether they deserve it or not, or just automatically doing that, because again, they don't want to believe this is going on in their own town. And preserving that image in their mind, whether, you know, even though it is going on in their own town, mm-hmm. and there is evidence for it. I wonder how much that kind of an angle, and that could be an issue here if they do keep this trial in Lecter County.
It's definitely something that the lawyers deal with. And again, I'm not a lawyer, defense sure. or prosecutor,
no.
But one way you counter that, at least as a behavior guy, this is the way I counter that, is so let's think about it. How would you overcome a negative confirmation bias with someone who's saying that this person did abhorrent things? We knew the judge was doing this, you know, sexual favors for lighter sentences or whatever it was. And this person's got a really shady, creepy background.
Mm-hmm.
If you're painting it in that picture of right now of shady, creepy background and you're trying to discredit, what I do is, what we do here all the time is, well, let's take a deeper look at this life arc. You know, we'll go with Sally Jane on this one. Sally Jane. Tell me about what it was like growing up for you. So, mm-hmm. so in other words, what they do is you humanize the individual. And then when you start humanizing that individual, the words they say mean a lot more than just some subjective, you know, thing that is just a title and label of, oh, they're a drug addict, they're an alcoholic. Well, that's dehumanizing someone. If you humanize them, the words coming out of their mouth tend to mean a lot more, because again, the defense attorney or whatever is going to walk them in their shoes so you can understand them. And then the other key thing is to demonstrate that this is not someone with an axe to grind. This is someone who's actually making amends in their lives. They're just merely laying out facts and details. And here's how you do it. You have to trust them.
Yeah.
And the way you trust people is, again, they have to show transparency, openness, and vulnerability. Those behaviors inspire someone to believe you. So when you can actually own your behavior, yes, I was this person. Here's the things I did wrong in my life. Here's what I've gone in my life. And they don't try to sell you on anything. They allow you to make the choice on how you think they are now. Because mm-hmm. I've seen some of these people have actually reformed their lives pretty well. A lot of people, when they go through some trauma, they reform their lives well. So, and if you have a lot of allegations or enough allegations that you're going to have a couple of these individuals that have actually been on this journey of, all right, I started out a beautiful human being like we all do. I went through some real good trauma that really destroyed me, and I hit my bottom. When I hit the bottom, I was in the jail system, in the court system, and all these things, and then all these horrendous things happened to me. But I crawled myself up out of here, and here's just the facts, ma'am. Boom. And mm-hmm. then the jury makes a decision. So instead of just saying a drug addict, we now have an arc of a human being that they have a lot more credibility now, because who hasn't hit their own bottom?
Yeah.
Who hasn't done these things? So that's what I would do.
I mean, that's going to be the job of the attorneys to really to sell it to the jury. No matter, do you think something like this though needs to be moved out of that county, no matter what, just because it's just too close to home, it's too tight knit, it's too small. I mean, you're talking about literally having the trial in the place where there's allegations of all this corruption going on.
I mean, my humble opinion, it would probably help it. Because of those things, because fear, you know, you want people to not be fearful and waiting for confirmation bias one way or the other, which is why we have a jury. You know, juries mm-hmm. hopefully are mitigating all these things when they're doing jury selection, because you cannot avoid. And if you're like us all, we all have confirmation bias. It's okay. Yeah. But why we have loving critics in our lives, why we have juries of peers. It's why we have prosecution defenses. It's to help us overcome our human frailties of the confirmation bias. But I think moving the venue would probably help. But again, I'm not the expert in that area.
I don't know how you couldn't move the, you don't even have to, I would feel like in a case like this. If there's ever a case that calls for it, where the corruption is literally in the building that you're going to try and get the case amongst pieces of the infrastructure that would have been in place for allowing some of this stuff to happen. And let's say they've cleaned house. Let's say it's all fresh and so clean. But it's still, you know, the optics, all of that, it needs, you know, so they have to think about that.
I mean, just think about this. Not making the attempt would also be pretty telling, too, would it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but these people run into all of these people at church and the grocery store. And even if they did clean house, everybody knows somebody in this community. So even though it's a jury of their peers, I think there's still that pressure from the community that you want to protect the infrastructure that's been there for probably a century. Everybody knows everybody, you know,
and the level of personalization, like we said, you know, if you have a personal relationship with someone and you know, and you're going to rationalize how you, because it all it's going to take is probable doubt, you know, in one person. I think it's a very tricky situation, but I definitely think it helps move it away from there as much as possible to get a jury pool with less knowledge of this. Again, everyone's going to know about it in that whole area, but just less, I guess a better way to put it, less personal connection to this.
What do you make of this? Several interviewees describe being warned not to report the misconduct. This is an allegation that has been made. There's, you know, don't, because it, you know, will ruin your, it wasn't just will ruin your reputation or no one will believe you. The allegation is that some were told they'd be found dead over a mountain. That's kind of that's a harsh one. That's a harsh thing to say to somebody after, well, anything for any reason, but especially after you violated them in a horrible way. You talk about this, you'll be found dead somewhere.
Sounds like the mafia, doesn't it?
For a little bit. I mean, and I'm wondering, okay, just threats, or have they ever carried that out? I retrospectively looking on this, that kind of makes me want to look at suspicious deaths in the area over the last handful of years, like over the however long these people have been there, or even longer. Because look, I'm usually things like this just don't happen in a vacuum. It's not always just one person that decides to completely change the way that this ecosystem works. Usually in these judicial type systems, when there's systematic corruption or generational corruption, it's just that, it's generational. It keeps going. Well, the former ones did it this way too. Look at the new perks of the job you have, Mr. Judge. Wait, that's a perk? I mean, yeah. I mean, in some horrible, horrible way, if you have a very sick mind, some of these things, people are like, oh, wow, I can get away with this. It makes me wonder, would you have, are you suspicious at all about, if in fact that threat was made, about, I wonder if they ever did carry that out at some point in time, if there's some legitimacy to that threat?
Yeah, it's definitely something I think they need to investigate that as well, because in order for a threat to be effective, it has to have teeth. And how do threats have teeth? Well, they have to have a past example of it being just that. When I saw that death threat as well, and even because this goes to the sheriff starting to wear the vest around and him making the claims that he feared for himself and his wife, his daughter, that seemed very odd to me. I think that's why people were looking at that whole psychotic break and paranoia, maybe. unless he found out something about those threats being actually very tangible, very real, because that's what gives things teeth and legs. And again, but that happens if it is systemic over time, and it's a known established fact that if that threat is made, it has the ability to be carried out upon. And I have this example, whether the example is factual in your own mind or it's just urban legend, it still has the same power over you. So urban legend could play a part in it, but it definitely needs to be flushed out. All these things. I mean, just think about every time I see cases like this, I just think about every time we're saying here, this needs to be looked at. This person needs to be interviewed. I'm just thinking about the bandwidth of individuals that need to be interviewed, processed, assimilated, and who's doing that? And what's their objectivity?
Mm-hmm. They'd have to call in outside people to do all of this. Just, 100%. You know. I mean, haul somebody in, put up a trailer outside, and they literally live there for like a year or two to interview people. There's no way that somebody inside this community can be doing the interviews. There's just no way.
Yeah, there's just, yeah. This is just such a mess in that community. I want to go there and just hang out for a week and have coffee at the local diner and talk.
You get a vibe. You know, I think it's, and that's why I love, and you cited Brian Etten at the very beginning. You know, he does a really good job of getting the vibe on the ground. You know, because walking the ground, you know, as I used to say, touch it, taste it, feel it. Because when you get the energy there and you actually do the interaction, it gives a lot of context to the data we see from, you know, from 30,000 miles, that's a long way, you know, from 3,000 miles away to that. But that's why it's really, really important to walk the ground, interaction, to feel, you know, the just the tenor and tempo of the people around you. It goes a long way.
Yeah, there's some very interesting interviews that he's done with some of the folks there. His channel is Brian Etten Investigates, if you want to check him out in their entirety. Let us know your thoughts in the comments section on this case. We would love to hear that.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date, it notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.